Well, I always think Thanksgiving is one of the best holidays because it's so uplifting and so positive. I hope that you had the chance to celebrate today or tomorrow or over the weekend with your family and friends. Today, Karin and I will be traveling down to Moose Jaw to enjoy a big Thanksgiving dinner with our family. I'm looking forward to all that turkey and all the fixins that we get at Thanksgiving. But you know what I like about Thanksgiving besides the turkey and the pumpkin pie? That's the least commercialized of all the holidays. You know, the stores, they cash in on Christmas and Valentine's Day and Easter and other holidays, but there's not much of a spending spree at Thanksgiving for retailers. Because of that, we don't suffer from Thanksgiving overkill. We're not expected to buy Thanksgiving candy or hang up lights in the house or pass out Thanksgiving gifts. Thanksgiving is pretty simple. You got the turkey and the pumpkin pie. And those are the basics. You think about it. You know, commercialized Thanksgiving would be filled with irony, wouldn't it? Because at Thanksgiving, we're supposed to be thankful for what we already have. You don't get to write a wish list at Thanksgiving. Instead, you make a list of what you have and you count your blessings. It's a time to say thanks. There's a funny story about Rudyard Kipling. And you probably know him. He wrote the book, The Jungle Book. Back in 1894. Unlike many of writers in his day, Kipling was one of the few who had the opportunity to enjoy his success while he was alive. And he made a great deal of money writing. And one time a newspaper reporter came up to him and said, "You know, Mr. Kipling, I just read that someone calculated that the money you make from your writings amounts to over $100 a word." And he said, Mr. Kipling kind of raised his eyebrows and he said, "Well, really, I wasn't aware of that." The reporter was being a little bit cheeky, and he reached down to his pocket and took out a $100 bill, and he said, "Mr. Kipling, could you give me one of those $100 words?" And Mr. Kipling looked at that $100 bill for a moment, and he took it, folded it up, put it in his pocket, and said, "Thanks." And that was his $100 word. And he's right, because the word thanks is really a very, very valuable word. It's one word that is too seldom heard, too rarely spoken, and too often forgotten. It's a word that actually can make us richer. Sir John Templeton, a billionaire investor, was once asked, "What is the secret of wealth?" And he said, "Gratitude. If you're not grateful, you're not rich, no matter how much you have." Gratitude is one of the keys to a happy life. The more grateful we are for what we have, the more joy we find in this life. So why is it then that so many of us who live in this affluent society struggle then with discontentment? I think most of us probably have a tendency to compare ourselves with others. You ever find yourself doing that? Compare ourselves with those whose lives appear to be richer and fuller and more exciting than ours. Or we just spend too much time on Facebook looking at people who brag about their latest holidays or whatever. When we compare our lives with theirs, we feel shortchanged and we wonder, why do others have it so much better than I do? But having a thankful heart is not about comparing ourselves to others. It's about rejoicing and recognizing and acknowledging what God has done in our life. So today we're going to look at a psalm, Psalm 16, and we're going to look at it from the perspective of thanksgiving. So starting in verse 1 of Psalm 16, it says, "Keep me safe, O God, for in you I take refuge. I said to the Lord, 'You are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing. As for the saints who are in the land, they are the glorious ones in whom is all my delight. The sorrows of those will increase who run after other gods. I will not pour out their libations of blood or take up their names on my lips. Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. You have made my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. I will praise the Lord who counsels me. Even at night, my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body will also rest secure because you will not abandon me to the grave, nor will you let your Holy One see decay. You have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." In these few verses, David reminds us of some of the things that we can all be thankful for. And if we concentrate on them, they'll help us to develop and maintain a thankful heart. And so I'm going to give you three things that you can do today to have a thankful heart or to maintain a thankful heart. And the first one is to acknowledge that God is the source of all the good things in your life. In verse 2, David wrote, "I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing." In the book of James, it says, "Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father." In other words, all the good things you have in your life, you can thank God for them. Because every good thing in your life is a gift from God. Even the things that we typically take for granted are gifts from God. A Christian psychologist named Robert McGee teaches his clients a gratitude exercise to help them recognize the goodness of God in every single detail of their life. He tells them that from the time you wake up until the time you leave for work, so just in those early hours of the morning, there are at least 100 things that you can thank God for, just as you're getting your day started. When you woke up, you can thank God that you slept on a bed, that you had a pillow for your head, and a blanket to keep you warm. You can thank God that you slept under a roof and not under the elements. You thank God that you have an alarm clock that helped you to get up on time, that you have electricity to light and to heat your home. You thank God that you have running water and a refrigerator that keeps things cold and a stove to cook things on. You can even thank God that you have a toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant, shampoo, soap, and shower, and most importantly, indoor plumbing. So I think you get the idea. There are thousands of things that we can enjoy, things that we take for granted, that benefit us on a daily basis, and they're all gifts from God. Everything that's good is a gift from God. And so we have a lot to be thankful for. And gratitude is one of the key disciplines of a happy life. But you know, often our attitude toward life is really a matter of perspective, isn't it? For example, I grew up in the small city of Moose Jaw. And some people there, you know, they have bigger houses than others, but everyone shops at the same stores and eats at the same restaurants. People there generally live in one community and have a similar standard of living. Now, when I moved to Greater Vancouver, to that area, I found it was quite different. I became very aware that many people there live a very wealthy lifestyle, one that's far beyond anything I could hope to attain on a pastor's salary. You know, the big mansions with the ocean view and the Mercedes and the BMW sports cars, and those are just what they give their kids to drive. They're just very wealthy people. And so for the first time in my life, I felt poor next to those people. In Vancouver, there's a lot of people who live very, very well. But you know, material wealth is all relative, isn't it? It's just who you compare yourself to. When I lived in Africa, which was about 18 years ago, I worked with a Kenyan Christian man named Thomas. And he lived on an island in Lake Victoria. And I had the privilege of being a guest in his home. Now, to get to his house from the capital city of Nairobi, where I was living, we traveled by bus, by boat, and then by foot. Just to get there was quite a trip. And it was a trip that I'll never forget. It was very unique. Now, our journey had started out at about midnight from a dark alley in downtown Nairobi. So we had to stand in this lineup to purchase these bus tickets. And my friend Thomas, he wanted to check the bus schedule, so he asked me to hold our place in line while he went to check it out. And so I stood there in this line, in this dark alley at midnight, in this foreign city, surrounded by hundreds of people I didn't know, and I became very aware of the fact that I was the only Canadian that was there. And while I was standing there, I watched a mob carry out some vigilante justice on a man who had actually been accused of stealing. Now in Kenya, if someone is caught stealing, they don't bother always to call the police. They just take care of the thief themselves. And so it was a little bit scary standing there. I don't know what that guy stole, but I'm not sure if it was worth the beating that he received. And so here I am standing in this dark alley in the middle of the night and thinking to myself, Rob, just don't touch anything that doesn't belong to you. Then you'll probably get through this. Well, to my relief, my friend Thomas came back with some bus tickets and we boarded a bus and we took an all-night ride from the city of Nairobi to the city of Homa Bay, which is on the shores of beautiful Lake Victoria. And when we got there, we caught a smaller, more crowded bus, and we traveled 40 kilometers over the worst road I've ever been on. And what was supposed to be about a one-hour trip ended up being a three-hour trip because along the way, our bus broke down. And so we spent the afternoon standing in the hot sun in the middle of nowhere waiting for another bus to come. We waited for a long time. And then the bus finally came and it took us to the village of Mbita, just in time where we caught the last boat to Mfogano Island. And now the boat that we rode in was a 30-foot handmade mahogany, a fishing vessel with no life jackets, no paddles. It was packed, absolutely full. My fellow passengers included about 40 other Kenyans, a calf, two goats, and about 20 fresh Nile perch. The boat sat very low in the water, and that Yamaha 40-horsepower engine, outboard engine, just labored to push that heavy boat through the waves for over an hour until it reached land. I was very happy then when we finally got back on dry land. And when we arrived at the island, we made our way by foot to Thomas's house. He lived in a small two-bedroom mud house with a tin roof, one window, and a kerosene lantern. The island where he lived was very remote and had no cars, no electricity, no indoor plumbing, no phones, no grocery stores on the island. For food, they raised their own chickens, they grew their own corn, and fished in the lake. And that's how they survived. One thing about the Kenyan people is that friendships and hospitality are really important to them. Wherever we went, Kenyans always took very good care of us. That night, Thomas's wife, Deborah, made us a delicious chicken dish for supper. Now, for them, with their humble belongings, I'm sure that was very expensive, but they were very, very generous people. But Thomas and Deborah didn't have a spare bed for guests in their humble home, and so they arranged for me to stay with Thomas's cousin, George. And George lived in a small one-room mud hut with a bed and a mattress. That's all he had. He was gracious enough to give up his bed for me to sleep on, and he slept on a foamy on the dirt floor. And Thomas took me over to George's hut to introduce us, and we had a nice little chat, and then we hit the sack. And I was ready for a good night's sleep after that long, long journey. But just after a few hours of sleep, I was awakened by some rumbling. George was a bit of a sleepwalker, and he got up out of bed, and he crawled into bed with me. At first, he laid at the edge of the bed and was snoring away, and then he started to roll closer and closer to my side of the bed. When I could feel his breath on my neck, I decided that was close enough, and I hopped out, and then I slept on the foamy on the floor. The next morning, Thomas asked me how I slept, and I thought the incident with George was kind of funny, and so I shared with him how George got a little bit too close for comfort in the night. Thomas was a little embarrassed. He said to me, I said, I'm sorry. He says, I could tell he'd been drinking honey beer that night, and if Deborah finds out, he said, she's going to kill him. And so after seeing what happened to that thief in Nairobi, I thought, I better not tell Deborah, just in case George ends up in the same fate. So during my time in Kenya, Thomas and I took a few more trips together. What I learned from my friend Thomas was what many people have observed when working among those who have much less material wealth than what most of us have. They place a much higher value on friendship. And during my time in Kenya, Thomas was a very good friend to me. In the Psalms, David touches on the value of friendship. He wrote, as for the saints who are in the land, they are the glorious ones in whom is all my delight. The next time Thomas visited me in my townhouse with my three large bedrooms and my two bathrooms and my refrigerator full of food, I felt self-conscious because of my comparable wealth. Now when I start to feel discontent with life, I think about that. I think about how in the West, in our world, with all of our striving for achievement and material gain, we often overlook the greatest gifts that God has given us, like the gift of friendship, even our friendship with God. Some of us miss out on the greatest gifts of life because we are so restless and dissatisfied, because we've not learned the art of being content. In other words, we don't recognize all the good things that God has given us. See, our focus can't be on what we don't have or who has it better than we do. Our focus must be on all the good things that we do have in our lives. In Psalm 103, verse 2, it says, let all that I am praise the Lord. May I never forget the good things he does for me. And so we need to remember that every good thing in our life is from God. And we need to be grateful and full of greatness, full of thankfulness for what he has given us. Now, another way to maintain a thankful heart is to recognize the pleasant places in your life. David said in verse 5, for the Lord, he says, Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. You have made my lot secure. the boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. David is saying, God has given me a good life. Which is kind of interesting for David to say that, because if he wanted to, he could have complained a lot about his life, about his experience. He could have appeared on Dr. Phil and talked about how horrible his life had been. He could have said, you know, I was the black sheep of my family. My brothers never respected me. You know, when I was just a teenager, I was forced to battle a vicious giant. I even had to pick up my own stones off the battlefield. I shouldn't have had to fight that battle. The government let me down. They should have protected me. Hey, there's a lot of injustice in the world. Even the king tried to kill me. And so I spent time on the run. My best friend was taken from me. And this woman, this temptress, seduced me and enticed me to murder. Now, that's not exactly how it all happened, but if David was the complainer, then he'd probably blame others and not himself. And David could have ended his story by saying, you know, eventually my own son rebelled against us and tore our family apart. Oh, woe is me. Now, all those things happened in David's life, but many other things happened too, good things and pleasant things. And those are the things that David focused on. Almost anyone's life could be a tale of tragedy or a tale of victory. Depends on which story you want to tell. Depends on what your focus is. For example, there's a story about two friends who bumped into one another on the street, and one of them was forlorn and was almost in tears. And his friend asked him, he said, what has the world done to you, my friend? And the sad fellow said, well, he said, let me tell you, three weeks ago, my uncle died and left me $40,000. Well, that's a lot of money. Yes, but two weeks ago, a cousin that I never knew died and left me $85,000 free and clear. Wow, it sounds like you've been blessed. No, he said, you don't understand. You see, 1 week ago, my aunt passed away, and I inherited almost $250,000. He said, well, that's unbelievable. Why do you look so glum? He said, because this week, nothing. See, almost anyone's life can be a tale of tragedy or a tale of victory. It depends on which story you want to tell. It depends on what you want your focus to be. Just like David, we have been assigned our portion and our cup. There are many, many things in our life that we didn't choose, like our parents or where we were born, our looks, our natural talents, our intellectual capacity. Those things were assigned to us. And I don't know all the details of your life, but I know this, that there are areas of your life in which the boundaries have fallen in pleasant places. And we need to recognize them and give thanks to God for them. We can look at all the things that we don't have and all the disadvantages that have been placed on us, but that kind of thinking only leads to misery. And so we need to recognize the pleasant places. We need to recognize the good fortune that comes our way and give thanks. And thirdly, to develop and maintain a thankful heart, we need to look ahead to better days. David said in verse 6, surely I have a delightful inheritance. He's saying, what the future holds for me is even better than what I have right now. In the Psalms, you know, whenever David speaks of the future, it seems like he always is optimistic about it. He said, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. He said, God is our God forever and ever, and he will be our guide to the end. And the Lord will indeed give what is good, and our land will yield its harvest. In today's text, he says, surely I have a delightful inheritance. And he says, you will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. David is saying, the best is yet to come. When you live with a thankful heart, it's easy to be optimistic about the future. In A.W. Tozer's book, Knowledge of the Holy, he wrote these words. He said, the whole outlook of mankind might be changed if we would all believe we dwell under a friendly sky, and that the God of heaven, although exalted in power and majesty, is eager to be friends with us. So if you're struggling with discontentment this morning, please try to remember that you live under a friendly sky, and God is eager to be friends with you. When our mindset is woe is me, it's difficult to be optimistic about the future. But when we recognize that God has already blessed us so much, it's easy to believe that even better days lie ahead. Having a thankful heart enables us to recognize God's blessing, his presence in our life, past, present, and future. Enables us to live with a positive outlook on life. And being intentional about Thanksgiving is important because we live in a society that constantly breeds discontentment. We're constantly sent messages by advertisers that are designed to develop compulsive spending and consumer habits. But always wanting more doesn't bring peace of mind or contentment. Contentment is only cultivated through gratitude and thanksgiving. David ends the psalm by saying, "You have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." If you're still discontent with life, then I want you to know that to fall in love with God is the greatest of all romances, to seek him, the greatest adventure, and to find him, the greatest reward. All the greatest rewards of life are available to you. You don't have to achieve anything else or accumulate any more stuff. All you need to do is to recognize them and be thankful.